is present. Mr. Grasso, will you approve the minutes from the May 19th, or March 19th? May, let's get to May.
Nice try.
I approve the minutes, sir.
Thank you. Is there any errors or omissions? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There were a couple, two little typos, but I pointed them out to your assistant, and I would move that we approve them as amended.
Okay, the motion to approve is amended. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Motion carries. And I forgot about my microphone. Sorry, folks. First on the agenda is Major General John Jensen to give us an overview and introduce himself to the committee. Welcome to the committee, General. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, sir. Major General John A. Jensen. Chair Ackland and members of the committee, as I stated, I'm Major General John Jensen, the Adjutant General of Minnesota, and today I'm joined by our Executive Director, Mr. Don Kerr. And I know Mr. Kerr has been here already this year representing our agency, but my schedule has finally allowed me to appear before the committee, so I just wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to come and address the committee. First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Chair, you and the entire committee for your public support. Thank you for your support of the Minnesota National Guard, and I want to give you the chance to ask me questions, as you may care about our operations at the end of this. To start, let me give you a quick update of some of the recent activities that the Minnesota National Guard has performed or is currently performing as we speak. I'm sure you are all aware that we have been active this year supporting local authorities around the state. In late February, we conducted winter storm response in support of Steele, Freeborn, Renville, Goodhue, and Watonwan counties. Using small unit support vehicles, which are tracked high mobility vehicles, we rescued 182 stranded motorists and provided overnight emergency shelter to 319 travelers who were stranded in Olivia, St. James, Albert Lea, and Owatonna. Last week, we deployed a CH-47 Chinook heavy lift helicopter and a crew of 10 and maintenance personnel to assist the Nebraska National Guard with flood response activities there. They are still providing that support to the Nebraska National Guard team. These 10 soldiers and their aircraft are conducting diverse aviation operations to include moving very large sandbags to protect the Cooper Power Plant vicinity of Brownville, Nebraska, in the southeast corner of the state, delivering hay to stranded livestock. We expect this operation to come to a closure on 28 March, and with our soldiers being released from duty on the 29th of March. Here in Minnesota, we are also working with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management in the Department of Public Safety to assist local authorities in preparing to respond to spring flooding in our communities. And we stand ready to provide additional assistance, if necessary, at the call of the governor. And of course, we still have over 700 soldiers and airmen deployed overseas in federal service. We are working to prepare other units who are scheduled to deploy next year. We are also in the process of supporting a couple hundred of our soldiers who recently returned from federal service as they transition back into their predominantly civilian lives. With your continued support, your National Guard is strong, resilient, and capable. The organizational leadership is committed to our priorities of keeping our people first, developing our leaders, operating safely and securely in a fiscally responsible manner, and in partnering with other agencies to ensure the best possible outcome for the people of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, thank you once again for the opportunity to speak before this committee. With that, I stand by for any questions that you or the committee may have of me. Thank you.
Thank you, General Jensen. Any questions for the general from the committee? Well, I have a couple, and one was a comment. In 2014, Coochin County suffered a flood, and the National Guard was called out in relief on that. And I just got to commend the troops on how well they did. Provided the county and the community a great deal of relief. And probably the funniest story is we were out with Senator Klobuchar and somebody else, and we were at one of the resorts, and they were showing us what was going on in the sandbag, and they were having to do it on their gas pumps, and all of a sudden two Guards members showed up. They'd been walking the shoreline looking for damages and what needed to be done. in hip boots. And I asked them where they'd come from, and they said Rainier. Well, the city of Rainier was approximately by shoreline about 5.5 miles that they'd walked. I was amazed, and then they just kept going. They talked to us. So you can be very commended for the job that the troops do when they're called out on those emergencies.
Mr. Chair, thanks for those comments. Having deployed overseas as well as conducted state active duty myself, I can tell you that state active duty for our soldiers and our airmen takes a special place because you are directly supporting the citizens of your local community and state. And so I can tell you that while none of us look forward to conducting those operations, when we are given the opportunity, we come and to do our best job there.
Well, and thank you, General. What was nice is they took brochures because they wanted to come back and see what it was like when it wasn't flooded. So.
And hopefully some of them came back, Mr. Chair.
And then the other question I have, General, is what is the deployment rotation schedule of the Guard at this time? Are we on a regular rotation basis for our Guard members?
Mr. Chair, we are. We've approximately, the last 2 years, we've mobilized about 1,500 soldiers and airmen. That will continue for the next couple of years. We see potentially 2 years from now, we see a very large deployment with our 1st Brigade team headquartered out of Bloomington, but it's really a statewide unit. That deployment could be up to 3,000. So we anticipate 1,500 here in 2019, 1,500 in 2020, and then 2021 or 2022 could be up to 3,000.
Thank you, General. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, General, for sharing the information with the committee. I just got an email not too long ago from the U.S. Navy League. There's a new ship that's being constructed named after Minneapolis, St. Paul. Has the Navy League approached you at all on this?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, not to me personally they haven't, but we would certainly do whatever we could to support that activity, being remindful of go Army, beat Navy.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions for the General? Oh, Representative Grossel, I'm sorry.
Thank you, sir, for being here today. And I guess we had a conversation last time about our National Guard troops when they get deployed. My son was among them. I went to Lithuania for deployment, and he had a concern that they were there without ammunition. And being a father of a soldier who's being deployed someplace like that, I have that same concern. I don't know if you have anything to do or if you have any say about that, but when the other branches of other militaries are there and they're fully prepared, fully armed for anything that might come, I would like to see our troops in that same position to where, heaven forbid something goes wrong, that they can do the job that they've been trained to do. Now, I was told, rest assured, we figure we can get the ammunition to them ASAP, but you know as well as I do that time can consume a lot of bodies. And in that same conversation, there is a mention of the armor that wasn't able to live fire train because of an error back somewhere along the trail from some supply lieutenants or ammunition lieutenants or somebody to where they couldn't get their ammunition to train. So that gives me more pause to say, if at all possible, if you have anything to say about it, to make sure that our troops have everything they need right there where they're going to be.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, yes, the particular event that you're talking about was a training event that we participated in Europe as part of the European Response Initiative, which was intended to counter Russian influence in that part of Europe. And while I can't speak to the exact national caveats and training resources that were available because I was not there. I'm very confident that the European Command as well as U.S. Army Europe were prepared and would have given the appropriate equipment to our soldiers if necessary.
Representative Grossel.
Is that something that you would be willing to take a little harder look at to see, you know, is there a reason why the other nations who are participating in the same thing, why they are fully prepared with all the munitions that they would need and ours are not? Because I would rather have ours fully prepared than to depend on anybody else to cover our soldiers, who are the best on the face of the planet.
General.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, yeah, absolutely. If in fact we go back to Europe in that training environment as part of a European response initiative or any other initiative, we will certainly take a look at that much more closely.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being tardy. I had public union constituents outside that wanted to visit for a little bit. So my question is actually getting back to this. Thank you for being here, General. I just want to know what your title is here in Minnesota. I missed that. So,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I'm the Adjutant General of Minnesota National Guard, as well as the Commissioner of the Department of Military Affairs.
And that's what I thought, Mr. Chair. So I noticed one of your ribbons is you were enlisted at one time. Like that a lot. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, General. Representative Detmer.
I'm trying to think what I was going to ask. It's terrible. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to compliment, General, on your staff. Whenever I've had to call your office, usually getting a hold of Mr. Kerr about an issue regarding military affairs or somebody who is currently serving, I usually got back within the next day or so with an answer. So I want to compliment your office and your staff on that. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, thank you very much for that comment. We take exceptional pride in our customer service to our soldiers, our airmen, their families, as well as the overseers of our agency, both federal and state.
Any other questions of the committee for General Jensen? General, thank you for coming today. We appreciate the introduction, and I'll echo what Representative Detmer said, that we've never been, your department always gets back to us immediately with our questions. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Have a good day. So the next up is a presentation from the United Veterans Legislative Council, and while they're coming up, my son Jared is in the audience today. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Kaiser, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Get ourselves settled here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. Currently, it's a two-year gig every time we do that. We'd like to have continuity of command a little bit. We've got a printouts, I think, of all the different parts that we do. We have over 30 organizations in this. But I'll bring you back to the start of this. In 1968, there were pretty perilous times for veterans and military in Minnesota. There was all sorts of things going on in the streets. And the veterans organizations at that particular time said they needed to do something to try to legislate something that would make things better for veterans. And that was started over 50 years ago, 1968, in February. And since that time, we've met monthly for all those 50 years trying to facilitate legislation that's going to make Minnesota more veteran and veteran business friendly. It's important for us to work with all the different veterans organizations and civilians and yourselves to make these things work right. We have been successful. Right now, we're tracking 48 plus bills that are in the House and Senate. And they go up and they go down and they disappear. So that's what our objective is, to not have them disappear, to be facilitated and signed off by the governor. We really appreciate the efforts for you to do the right things, and that's, I guess, what we'd like to say is we're part of your board of directors. We're here to make you look good, and when you don't look good, we'll let you know. But in a persuasive gentle way we try to get our bills passed and have a good attitude towards it. We're not going to win every battle, but we'd like to. The UVLC then in 2000 decided that we needed to make ourselves a nonprofit organization. That enabled us to then take funds and then be able to give tax deductions for those organizations in addition to the membership dues that they have. Our official mission, as you'll see on there, is to speak with one voice to facilitate legislation that makes Minnesota more veteran and veteran business friendly. In order to do that, we have to have organizations hire, come involved with this. And on the next page is a, if you have less than 100 people in your organization, because there's individuals and smaller groups, as you look on there, not all the big ones, it's $50 and $100 for the ones over that. The last thing I'd talk about is our agenda that we have. It gets from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning, and we go through a lot. You see that we have the federal people there, and they get to speak, and then we get to discuss with them what's good and bad about what they're doing. And the agencies, the federal Vision 23, the Minneapolis and the St. Cloud VAs, and then Fort Snelling. All those things are there, plus the other organizations, that, including the Department of Veteran Affairs and different entities that you see on that, try to go through that today. We have to kind of not give them too much time. Everybody's got to tell their story, but we try to keep it quiet or quickly. Mike is our first vice president. We're both Vietnam combat veterans, and one thing that we do want to have is that no one should be treated like our generation of era veterans in that time, and we are adamant in that happening, and we will not let it happen, which is actually a positive thing. When 9/11 hit, I just knew that bad things are going to happen, and we need to take care of these young men and women who are going to meet harm's way. And unfortunately, it continues on 18 years later. We hope that we don't have to have that continue. With that, I'd like to have Mike say a few words about what he thinks about this. He's a Navy SEAL and frogman from Vietnam, and he knows the good, the bad, and the ugly about that.
Mr. Rivard.
My name is Mike Rivard, and thank you, Chairman, and thank you, members. I'm a farm boy out of Marshall, Minnesota, and ended up in the Navy. I was in Vietnam in 1967, 68, before Tet, during Tet, and after Tet. We had a great group of guys, but we had some serious challenges. One of the challenges was all my divers got poisoned by Agent Orange. And I was at a SEAL reunion in August down in San Diego, and met my buddies that were, you know, that we had served with in Vietnam. And the only ones of us that are alive are cancer survivors. So we have a pretty sensitive thing about, you know, the whole process of trying to heal and do all that. I look at the young vets, you know, the post 9/11 vets, and I have a little secret. I look in their back pockets to see if I can see an L-shaped bulge. And that's their inhalers, because they've been downwind of, some of them have been downwind of burn pits and been depleted uranium and all that sort of stuff. So we have a special challenge with, you know, the whole issue of toxicity, because it has some latency to it. It doesn't show up for a while. So I want to encourage you and encourage everyone else here to carefully visit with the younger vets and their families and their children and all that, because a lot of these vets are not coming in. They see themselves as, you know, that's kind of a weakness to come in and get treatment and that sort of thing. So that's one of the things we try to encourage. The other focus that we have is with women vets and with the handicapped vets. And the amazing thing with the paralyzed vets, I think a lot of them are kind of crazy, because they have a rugby team. And I'm guessing that about a third of them are Marines. So they are a tough crowd. and they're very focused, and they're just a delight to work with. So the amazing thing about the UVLC is that our meetings, you know, the congressional delegation shows up for these meetings, and we talk, and they talk, and all this stuff. And then we get together, and we get relationships and connections with them. So that's one way that we can become effective about things. So I'm pleased to be here. I live in Senate District 60 and House District 60A, so that's where I'm from now. So I'd like to thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you both for your testimony. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I see a lot of you guys, both of you, at a lot of the hearings whenever there's a veterans bill that comes up in any type of committee. I see you both there available to testify, and I really appreciate that. And also you've been able to bring other people, other veterans involved in what you're doing, and also being you're both involved with the Military Action Group, the MAG, and also the Honor Flights involvement in there. And Mr. Rivera, could you talk a little about the farming, the veteran farming? I mean, that's something that a lot of people don't think right. about, but if you could just share a little bit about veterans and farming.
Sure. I'd be pleased to. One of the things we've all figured out is that we can't do much with recovery. You know, we could do all kinds of different things about recovery, but we can't get very far if we don't have a really terrific diet. And we've got to have a healthy diet in order to base the rest of our recovery on. I've currently got leukemia, so I'm dealing with that. And I know that to get ahead of that a little bit, I have to have a really high nutrition diet with a lot of fiber and all that sort of thing. So the kids that are impaired are going, well, we need this food. And then they're thinking about it. They're saying, well, I guess one way to get it is to grow it. So that's the way we're starting at this thing. We're starting saying that growing food and doing it in a little bigger way is a way to make sure that we're gonna kind of secure our healing a lot better. So there is a dilemma in farming, and I did talk to the president of the Farmers Union at their big right before Thanksgiving. They have their annual meeting, and I said, What are we doing for Plan B in case this whole thing with China doesn't work out? And he said, we really don't have a Plan B. So we're going, wow. So the focus that we have is on food farming, and we're trying to think about different ways of growing more food locally and then, reducing that 3,000-mile, trip from California, or 2,000-mile trip from California to get food here. And the story about food in California is if a plant is cut from the ground, it's in a chiller in 2 hours, or 2 or 3 hours. And so there's all kinds of kind of small things like that that crop farmers don't really think about. So we're getting more focused into the whole requirements and the piece of food farming. So what we're finding, I was at this Farmers Union meeting. I was sitting next to a guy, and he said, my wife and I have two farms, and we would like to convert these farms into healing farms. And I said, wow, we've got people that want a farm. So, that's kind of accidental. We're doing some stuff on purpose. But one of the things that I did in 1968 or 2018, I had a group of scruffy veterans who were thinking about, let's take over Lake Hiawatha Golf Course. So, of course, it threatened the park board a little bit, and the golfers got a little upset about it. They raised $50,000 to defeat because it was a campaign year for park board commissioners. But in January, I got a call we got defeated. So in January, I got a call from the park board saying, how would you like to have a golf course at the upper post at Fort Snelling? We said, well, we're pretty interested. So, we're moving in on that, and with kind of a combination thing with MACFEE, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. They're interested because they see that farming, this kind of farming, is motivating, and it has a great strategy to it, and it's a good livelihood. They also are interested because they want to get access to the food, and they particularly interested because they want to have living quarters. And we think we can do all that. So we're pretty happy about these opportunities. We're going to work real hard to make them real. So that's what I've got for you.
Representative Detmer.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody, any other questions? Well, I've got one comment, and I'm sure Representative Heinrich would join me in this. I'm surprised it's a third Marines that belong to rugby. It should be at least half. But the other question is, have you brought any initiatives to the Ag Committee on this veterans farming stuff? Representative Miller and I both sit on the Ag Finance Committee, and I think we'd both be real interested in seeing something like that.
We're forming it up, so I'm not sure that we'll have it this session, but we'll have some really good stuff.
And I forgot the vice chair, Representative Brand. So there's three of us that sit on that. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Brand.
Yeah, it seems to me there was some initiative in the past in legislature about veterans of farms legislation. I'm not sure if there's still money that's appropriated or not, but that might be worth tracking down as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
I forget the exact program, but, yeah, we passed it a couple of years ago. I think it's a tax credit. Or maybe it's, but there's something. As I open my mouth, I go, I forget exactly what it is, but there is something to get veterans involved in farming. There's something out there going right now.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Any other questions? Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony, and thank you from myself and all the committee for what you do on behalf of veterans. We appreciate it.
It's our pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Eklund moves that House File 143 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Eklund, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 143 will appropriate $100,000 in fiscal year 2020 to the Commission of the Veterans Affairs for a one-time grant to the Armed Forces Service Center, Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, for some costs that are associated with it. For myself personally, as a veteran, when I traveled, I know the USO things were a nice place to be able to stop by and get out of the craziness. And so I'm in support of this bill, and I have a couple gentlemen here to testify to the merits of the bill.
All right, please identify yourself for the record.
Hi. My name is Terry Branham. I'm the president of the board for the Armed Forces Service Center. Interestingly, Representative, I was born in International Falls and spend most of my summers there with part of the Davis clan.
It's a small world.
Yes, sir. The Armed Forces Service Center comprises about 200 volunteers that man the center, and we are asking for your support for one-time funding to cover the requirements of our construction and furnishings for our new center on the secure side of the airport. I know bonding has been mentioned. It would be difficult for us. It would not be as feasible because we would, if we had bonding, we would end up with opening a facility and we would have, wouldn't have the adequate bunks. We would have empty chairs. We would have no chairs, no tables, things like that that we really need on day one when we move in October. As you know, we're a 501c3 and we've been open 24/7. Since our opening of November 22nd, 1970, our organization was founded by Maggie Purdom after her son died in Vietnam. And he had written her and told her what significant impact that the USOs and these lounges had as a young enlisted person when he was traveling across the United States. We have a very strong connection to serving Minnesotans. For example, fallen service members who are KIA overseas or stateside, they perish by whatever means. We work with military casualty assistance and the military to assist the families of these fallen members from Minnesota and western Wisconsin and northern Iowa as they arrive at MSP, and we ensure a dignified arrival of that and turnover of that casket and the remains to those families. We do that nearly every month since 2003. Sometimes several times a month. We assist wounded warriors that are coming to the Armed Forces Service Center as a result of travel to the VA, and they're flying in or out because of the traumatic brain injury system there. So we assist a lot of veterans with getting them to their gates. We meet them at the door. The VA tells us they're coming. We meet them at the gate. We take them directly to their flights and ensure that they're cared for during that time. Every week, we host 25 to 50 Minnesota recruits that are joining the military services, and they come to our center. They're dropped off at the airport. We bring them up to our center, and we ensure that they are hydrated and cared for, and we help take away the nerves of getting ready to fly off to basic training. We make sure that they've got their boarding passes and they get to their boarding gates on time, so we care for them in that way. We've been a part of hosting the honor flights ever since they were begun here by Jerry Kaiser at MSP. We're out there in the early morning hours to greet those flights. We've supported over 1,100 charter buses that, with 45,000 troops that come into MSP going out to Camp Ripley and Camp McCoy, as well as soldiers that come in from those different bases that are going to fly out on charter air flights. We do meet and greets at the airport at all hours of the day since 2006. We have a group of troop greeters that wear the shirts that I'm wearing here today, and we've greeted over almost 400 flights since 2006. And we're out there, last night we were there till after midnight with a flight. We've provided a very welcoming environment. We're a flagship program in the United States. Our executive director there is Deborah Kane. She's seated up there, and she has assisted with the establishment of seven other private facilities like us, because they look to us as the flagship, as the way to do business to run one of these welcome centers. We are averaging about 1,500 guests per month. We have a large number of guests. Our desire is that we are able to include all veterans, but at the current time, we do not have that space. We're hopeful that our new location will provide us the space, but it also takes funds. And if we're short on funds, we don't have the money to support, because we refuse to charge any active duty people for any of our refreshments, beverages, or food items that we serve. We are totally supported by contributions by veteran service organizations, other corporations, and personal contributors that recognize our mission as critical to the community and the customer experience at the airport. We have no affiliation with the government. We receive no funds like our friends from the USO. So fundraising is only going to cover a part of the costs associated with this move to double our space. At this time, I'd like to ask my associate, Rick Dale, to also talk about some of the items of our move.
Mr. Chair, my name is Rick Dale. As Terry said, also on the board of directors at the Armed Forces Service Center. As he indicated previously, the new center on the secure side is going to give us an opportunity to expand to almost double our space, but which will obviously allow us to accommodate many more visitors. One of the unknowns we have as we move to the secure side is what the increase in visits will be. Today, we're fully aware of the fact that many service members that may be traveling through MSP looking for a connecting flight are not willing to leave the secure side to come out and visit us above the North Security Checkpoint on the mezzanine level. So we expect a fairly significant uptick in visits just with having those military service members be able to join us in the center. As we move to the secure side and the additional space, we're going to be adding significantly to our male and female bunk rooms. The Armed Forces Service Center at MSP is a little bit unusual among all of the various independents and USOs, in that we're one of the few that is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we can accommodate overnight stays. And in this climate, particularly between mid-November and mid-April some years, it's not unusual for service members that didn't intend to spend the night and MSP get to spend the night there, or maybe a couple of nights, particularly if they're heading from Minot or Grand Forks. We'll also be able to accommodate significantly more guests in a proper dining room. Today, we have one large lounge space that also includes a dining table that can seat four people. The new space is going to allow us to not only expand the lounge space, but add a proper dining area that's separate from that, that'll accommodate up to a dozen military members or their families. The lounge space doubles, so we'll have more space there. We're going to add a separate children's facility. Today, if there are young people traveling with their parents through the center, they want to try to entertain themselves. They're kind of doing it among the general population. So having a separate space, kids play area that can accommodate games and a TV and videos, et cetera, will be a real plus for us. All of that having been said, all of that requires more bunks, more dining furniture, more equipment in our kitchen space, the furnishings for the children's area. And I'm going to let Joe, who's sitting behind me and actually is our project manager for this move, I'll let Joe fill in a few of the other details.
All right, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Joe Jansen. As was mentioned, I'm with the Armed Forces Service Center, and I did a little work like this when I was with immigration in my civilian job before I retired. So that's why they drafted me to help with the move. We are asking you to give us this one-time money, and it's been very enlightening for me to come down as a citizen and go through some of the meetings and to see what actually goes on. And I want to thank you for having these open meetings. I've attended some meetings that have nothing at all to do with the Armed Forces Service Center, and it's great to see what happens on the level of the average citizen. So I want to thank you for the opportunity you give us to come down here and to ask for assistance.
Any questions, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Heidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Eklund, for bringing this bill forward. And I just wanted to thank you, gentlemen, and ask a question. I shipped off to boot camp in San Diego in 99. And I think I must have come through your center after being delivered there by MEPS, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
So I have personal experience of using your center. I think a couple of times I was in Iraq in 2003 and 2004, and so some different USOs and the Armed Forces Service Center. Is this, I guess, one of my questions, is it, was there a USO ever at MSP, or it was just you guys? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, no, Maggie Purdom went to the airport and asked if there could be a USO, and they actually went to the federal government and asked if we could have a USO. They declined. They said that we were not a big enough active military component city. Cities like Austin, Texas, Miami also don't qualify for USOs. So, no, it's not in the cards for what they see as what they want to support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, just one more question. I might have missed it. Does your organization operate in other states, like you mentioned the Austin airport, or is there an effort to try to do the Armed Forces Service Centers in other states?
There is. Our executive director has assisted the establishment of seven other places like us. One of them also uses our name, the Armed Forces Service Center. The ones in Detroit, she helped set up the Detroit two facilities that they have there. She helped Miami. I forget the others, but there were seven that we've assisted in showing them what our model is and how we raise funds and how we staff and things of that nature, how we operate.
Mr. Chair, thank you, gentlemen, for what you do. Again, my personal experience was it was such a blessing for not only myself, but I know the other men and women that I was with at the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Grosso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, gentlemen, for having that facility there. I know I myself benefited from it in the mid-'80s, traveling to and from my station and back home periodically, and I'd have to wait for my ride back up 250 miles north into northern Minnesota. So it was a good place to be able to hold up. And two of my children have also benefited from the facility as well. So
very nice.
Thank you. Keep it
thank
up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Robinson.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, myself and our twin sons also have utilized the facility there at the airport. And could you tell me when this project is completed? It's going to be completed. Will it be the premier facility in the country of this type?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Representative, it will be the absolute premier flagship Armed Forces Service Center. It'll be better than any USO in the entire United States.
And Mr. Chair,
the MAC, the airport puts that much value in serving our military, and they want this for our military. They've moved us three times, and they keep seeing that we utilize every bit of the space that they give us, and so they wanted to give us a greater space and give us greater ability to perform our mission. So they're spending some good money to assist us with this new facility, but they can't cover all of our costs.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks. And is there, in this, I don't know, if is there some matching funds that are going to be coming into this project too?
Yes, sir. We thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Representative, we have raised about $141,000 of our own money towards the items, but our total bill is going to be about $350,000. And so we came up with $100,000 last fall when we had our initial estimates of the space and the needs, and we were not aware of all of the items that we are going to need to increase the space with, that we needed different tables, chairs, bunks, etc. Just we're not able to estimate all of that. So that's where our shortfall is. That's why we're coming to you, so that we can open the doors and be a fully staffed, fully completed construction facility.
And Mr. Chair, my last question. I think you might have mentioned this before. You're sat. Everybody is all volunteer. Am I correct? And how many volunteer hours do you put in a year?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, we have almost 200 volunteers. We have one volunteer that was there on the first day it opened in 1970. She has 11,000 hours of volunteer time at the airport. Most of the troop greeters that you see here in our shirts, we are in the 800 to 2,000 volunteer hours. About a third of us are veterans, and about over half of us have military family connections. If they're not a veteran, they're guys like us, Vietnam veterans, that want to take care of our troops, want to continue to serve, want to be around soldiers. So it's a passion for us to want to do this. We do have five part-time staff. So if you did a navigator computation on our funding, we are at 89% is supporting our troops, and only 11% is administrative and fundraising. And our budget is about $170,000 a year, and we raise all that money by our volunteers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And finally, could you maybe, I don't think you have yet, could you share with the committee who can actually come into the facility? I mean, you've got your Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and so forth, the active component. How about the reserve component and maybe retired?
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, our organization brings in all we consider active duty. We consider the Minnesota Guard, all National Guard, all reservists are part of the active force. It's one fight, one team, one fight for this long war. And so all of those individuals are identified as active duty. So we have those ID cards identified. We also recognize and admit Medal of Honor recipients, Purple Heart recipients, and POW personnel. We are looking at expanding. When we get more space, we want to expand to at least all service-connected disability represented people, service members, former service members, and we want to look at possibly opening the doors to all military veterans, Minnesota veterans that would be traveling that would want to use our space.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have two more testifiers from the audience.
Yes.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon again, gentlemen and ladies. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the president of Honor Flight Twin Cities in Minnesota, and we've done 10 honor flights out of the Twin Cities. And they have been there in the mornings at 4 when we show up. When the veterans start showing up there at 5, they are serving them cookies and coffee, which they all got to have. The youngest World War II veteran would be 90, and we have one 97 going on the next one. The youngest Korea veteran would be 82, 83 years old. So they really appreciate the Armed Forces Center, and they're there early, and they some of them actually come back to watch them come back at 10 o'clock that night. On a personal note, 50 years ago I came back from Vietnam. I've been celebrated that I left with a Katyusha rocket came in and dinged me just 24 hours before I came to St. Paul. And that was I got there in the morning about, I think it was 8 o'clock, and my airplane didn't go out to North Dakota for another 7 hours. And there was no place for me. Nobody hassled me. I was pretty angry about the whole works. But it would have really been nice to have that Armed Forces Center. It started about 8 or 9 months later. So it's very important. I did turn out pretty good. I had my family and my father, who was a colonel in the reserves, and his friend was a two-star general. So I was greeted well when I finally got up to North Dakota. But it would be important for you to have this completed. And I know that the servicemen that come through there, I've been there when we were getting ready to go on a flight, and a 1st Infantry Division group came through there, and they insisted on saying and then thanking every one of the 77 World War II veterans that were going to Washington, D.C. They stopped the colonel. Their officers let them stop and shake the hands of all those gentlemen at Terminal 2. Thank you for your consideration. This is a great thing, and you should get this on to the next committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Next testifier, please state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Cindy Cunningham. I'm actually a family child care provider from 2 miles down the road, and I'm frequently here on family child care legislation, and this one is much closer to my heart, believe it or not. I have a son who is one of those Marine Corps vets. He was in infantry and was in Afghanistan. I have a son right now. 2 weeks ago I sent over he's in the Air Force, and he is now in South Korea. They have gone through many airports. We've been to the service center many times, donated and try to help support. I am thrilled with the other side of the security. And just to kind of maybe as the ringer of the day, I just want to say please, and you all know it, you all see it, but as a mom, it's really nice to know that as my kids come through or as other moms' kids come through the airports, these places are there, they're well established, they're well done. I've gone up and visited, so thank you very much for supporting this and pushing this through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham.
Mr. Chairman, if I could make one more comment on my eligible participants who entered into the center. I admitted that retirees and their families are also invited mm-hmm. into the center. We do ask them for donation. They're the only ones that we ever ask for money. And we had indications from the retiree community that they would pay for themselves. And as it's coming out, the retirees are paying for themselves plus about 2 soldiers that come in besides themselves. So the donations from the retirees, our Minnesota military retirees, is really important to us as well.
Representative Lecklin, closing statement.
It's a good bill, Mr. Chair. We'll do what we can to fund it.
Representative Russell.
I guess listening and looking at the bill, you've got 100,000 here, and from what they're saying, they need more than that. What is your plan to address this? This is for the author.
Well, my plan is to address what the request is, and hopefully they can raise the rest of the money, Representative Grossel.
So are you going forward with 100,000, or are you going, asking for more?
The bill is drafted, Mr. Chair, Representative Grassl, the bill is drafted for $100,000, so that's what they're looking for.
All right, Representative Unkland, do you want to renew your motion to House File 143 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, guys. Representative Purcell, House File 1603. Oh, and I got a little dyslexic there. House File 1063. I apologize for that, Representative Purcell. I did that to Representative Anderson earlier this year. So, anyway, so Representative Purcell moves that House File 1063. I want to try to do it again. Be referred to the General Register. Representative Purcell, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a straightforward bill. It's a resolution, and I'm going to not read a whole lot of it, but you all, I think, are aware we're in pursuit of three additional veterans' homes in Minnesota. And the state, Minnesota, the legislature has provided funding opportunity for the state share. Now we need the federal share from the Federal Veterans Administration. And this resolution just respectfully requests that the United States government follow through and get us our two-thirds funding for each of these veterans' homes. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll read the first. Be it resolved, the legislature of the state of Minnesota. That it urges the Congress, the United States, and United States Department of Veteran Affairs to allocate all necessary funding to provide the United States government's share of the construction costs for the proposed veterans' homes in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston, Minnesota. And so that's what we're going after. And I think a united front, as it were, and a reminder to the federal government of what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to do here. So.
Well, thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I just want to, you know, one of them's in Montevideo, and I've been deeply involved with this really since I got involved. And what encouraged me is just the incredible collaboration at all levels by all people. And as we've moved forward with every step of the way, this committee has been big supporters. And we got a lot right on this one. And I commend everyone that's been involved on this. I can tell you from the Montevideo perspective, just so that people understand, the deadline for the applications are April 15th this year. I believe they're all ready to go. I see someone smiling over there. So we're in good shape with that. And then we find out, I don't remember the date, but it's in the fall, in September? October. Okay, I'll have them comment on that. But generous support by the communities, by the state, by the federal government. And I don't know, maybe this committee is already aware, but Congressman Colin Peterson is now the chair of the Vets Committee in Washington. And he was in Montevideo. I'm sure he's at the other communities. But when he was in Montevideo there was the gentleman, Steve Williams, his estate gave a big contribution to Montevideo when he was there. And he did a thing that us politicians don't always do, and he basically pledged that he's going to make this a priority. So being a chair, I'm very encouraged by the direction that this is going, and I hope to find out great news here this fall. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. And I know Bemidji is one of the spots, too, Mr. Johnson from the department maybe come up and just give us a little update what's happening with the department.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Eklund, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Just a brief update. Representative Miller is correct. The deadline for submissions for the federal matching portion is April 15th. We are on pace ourselves, the Department of Administration, the team working on the drafting and development of the layouts and the site plans, architectural team, and the local community partners have worked, I wouldn't say seamlessly, but it has been a really straightforward process once we all established what everybody's marching orders were. So I would also echo his sentiment that the local community partnerships and the advocacy, Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston, the teams have done amazing work to get everything provided to us in order to be able to submit our applications on time and on schedule. So the applications are due the 15th of April. We'll be submitting each individually. Each project will have its own tracking at that point. Local donation deadline is the end of beginning of August, and we should learn mid-August what the project priority list should look like. Again, some of these have been delayed in the past. Congressman Peterson has submitted correspondence to the VA asking for expedited responses to the status of project applications, making sure that things are being laid out so that we understand as a state where we fall in the federal funding. The provisos here are we would know at the end of this year whether or not we've been successful in one or all of the federal matching grant requests, and we would commence construction. We would do spring of 2020 if we're successful this year. If not, we would be on the list and hold our position. The state funding that we received last year makes it more likely than not that the state will be successful eventually, because projects that have state support are higher priority than those that are just seeking full federal contributions. So we'll be submitting, and we'll keep the members of the legislature updated on that progress. Each of the individual communities have their own layouts and their own sort of special their own special plans, because we wanted the communities to own the projects that they're developing. We want them to be specific to the places that are supporting them. So happy to answer any other questions or follow up as needed.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know the President put more money into renovating our veterans homes and also new construction, and that from what I've read, it pretty much took that long list away, so it might be better chances of Minnesota coming more closer to the top of the list. And have you had any information on that?
Chair Eklund, Representative Detmer, we're still waiting on the list of projects that were approved with the large influx from the governor's appropriation last year. Our understanding is that the goal of the $700 million that was a much larger infusion than they've had in the past was to eliminate the waiting list. There were 50-plus projects that were on that list. The goal was to clear that backlog so that states could come in with new proposals and have a more quick process to receive some funding. So that one-time money has been utilized. We don't have the list yet of what projects received that funding. We're continuing to ask for it. Work with the Congressman Peterson's office, and we've also going to do some outreach with Congressman Hagedorn and to see if we can continue to, I don't want to say apply pressure, because that's not what it is. It's inquire from the highest level what the status is of that list. So.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Detmer.
And finally, I know if you're a new member of the committee, the VA, the federal VA, allows each state so many beds, and where would this, if we get all three homes built and occupied, how many beds would that give us, and are we still allowed more beds after that?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Eklund, Representative Detmer, yes, the federal VA appropriates a bed count or cap. For Minnesota, it's 1,058 beds. If all three of these new homes are funded and built, we would still have a balance of 24 to 36 beds, depending on some of the reallocations in our own system. For your information, MDVA has both skilled nursing beds and domiciliary beds. Now, to the federal VA, those count the same, but for us, there's different levels of care depending on if you're in a domiciliary or a skilled nursing facility. So there would still be some flexibility at the far end, and the governor and the commissioner have committed to the metro area veterans that we're going to continue to pursue opportunities to add skilled nursing options in Minneapolis or in the seven-county metro. The goal is to continue to address where there is a very significant need in terms of the veterans population. So this will get us close to the final mark, but we're going to continue to explore options to serve as many veterans as we can, continue to review our operations and make sure that that no matter where you are in the state, if you're in need of skilled nursing care, that the state is going to do everything it can to provide that.
Representative Detmer.
And another thing, which I mentioned to Military Affairs, Veterans Affairs does the same thing. If you ever call Mr. Johnson here or anybody in his office, they will usually get right back to you within the next day or so. So it's really great to have that connection. Thank you.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this forward. I know we've gone back and forth a few times during campaigns and such, but this was a bill, the Bemidji facility was a bill that was handed off to me by former Representative Hancock. And so former Representative Bliss and myself got a hold of Chair Detmer, kept this thing moving, kept it in the fight, and it got taken out by Governor Dayton in the closing moments of 2017, but we kept the pressure on everyone, leadership, and kept their feet to the fire, made them give us a commitment that we are going to see this done. And in 2018, we got it. We've got it moving. And so we have Representative Purcell back in the fight with us to keep these things moving as well for all three of the communities, and it is going to serve a lot of veterans that need these services. It's going to serve a very large portion of our indigenous population and reservations up north in my area, where we have a very high number per capita of veterans that need service as well. So that is something that we take care of our veterans, and that is and that's the main thing here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody in the audience care to testify on this bill? Representative Purcell, last words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I just thank all the members who signed on to this. Kind of said there, Representative Grossel, there isn't too much we can't do if we all work together. So this is living proof. It's been going on for 12 years at least. So thank you all, and appreciate your support.
Thank you. Representative Purcell renews his motion that House File 1063 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Both say nay. Motion carries. Moving forward, we plan to have the bill posted by Thursday so amendments can be done for the Veterans Affairs Finance and Policy Division. And we plan on hearing the bill on Tuesday and moving forward with that. So any questions? Representative Detmer and I have been talking about what needs to be in the bill and what we're trying to do. And if you guys have any questions, any of the members, please get a hold of me. With that, we're adjourned.